Okay, welcome again to another edition of the Better Health Radio Show on this Sunday evening, the 29th day of October, which is the final Sunday for the month. So let's go over and say a special good evening to your host, Dr. K.O. Ford St. Hill, and let's wish her a pleasant evening. Let me just take care of a slight matter here. There we go. Dr. Ford, are you with us?
Good evening, Gregson. Yes, I am.
Wonderful, wonderful.
All right. A warm welcome to our listeners here on the Better Health Radio Show.
Good to have you again.
We all know that this is a show that where we try to raise public awareness on common health issues that affect us all. As Gregson said, I am Dr. K.O. Ford St. Hill, and I will be your host this evening. We are looking forward to an engaging and interactive session this evening as we discuss speech and language challenges and the role of speech therapy. And I take this opportunity to remind our listeners that you can contact us with your questions and comments either by calling us at 434-1790 or you can send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. That's 266-4862, and Gregson will feed those to us. So remember, the call-in number is 434-1790, and today we're discussing speech and language challenges and the role of speech therapy. And with that, I welcome Ms. Sharika Bentham to the show. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Ms. Bentham. She was trained in New Zealand in speech and language therapy, and she's been working in private practice for close to 14 years. But don't let that fool you, she's a very young woman. And in her private practice, she and her team provide assessments and interventions for children and adults, because we always think about children, but children and adults with a range of communication disorders. That's probably how I should have worded this, communication disorders. I like that. She has special interest in autism and early intervention, and enjoys providing parent education, coaching parents how to interact with their children in ways which facilitate language development. Welcome to the show, Sharika.
Thank you so much for having me, and I love how you throw in a part of me not being too old.
No, you're not. You know, when people hear 14 years in private practice and that sort of thing, they think, oh, this could be some very mature lady. But, you know, we are very young. We are quite young, right?
We are, and we will stay that way.
Correct. So no matter what the number is. So communication disorders, because I like that. I wish I had read it before, then I would have said that instead of speech and language.
That's okay. They're used interchangeably. Yes.
Okay. So I know a lot of people at home are probably like, well, we can really go talk well over this, but this is a health issue, and it's a public health issue, because in a lot of the even adults, but so let's just say a lot of the clients I interact with, they're actually, I have to refer for speech therapy quite often, because they're just even small issues that I could see will cause problems in the future. But let's start with not the problem, and let's talk about what is normal speech and language development. So I guess we could tackle a few of the major milestones when it comes to communication and development.
Okay, perfect. I love to talk about normal development, because the reality is that a lot of parents, especially new parents, they don't know what the child should be doing at what age.
Yes.
Or what they shouldn't be doing at what age. So it's really good to look at what we class as the normal developmental milestones. And that's really, it's a range. We say it's a range. And it's what the child should be doing at a certain age. There are developmental milestones for everything, like walking, crawling,
yes,
turning over. But there are a lot of very important ones for speech. So we generally say that the first word should be coming in by the child's first birthday. So that's usually our benchmark. And it's around the time that they start walking too. So we see, mm-hmm, walking and talking around that same time. Before that, though, They should be babbling a lot. So we ask a lot of the time if the child babbled a lot as a baby, from even as early as 3 months, you're getting all those little sounds. Are they like, ooh,
yes.
And those little sounds, yes. And then we start to get, you know, the ba-ba, the da-da. That's when the mummies get angry because you start to hear the da-da first. And
I was about to ask you about that, Sharika. I was going to say, you know what? Let's dispel these myths, right? That these fathers have of, oh, you see, the child calls my name first. I kind of crushed my husband when our daughter was younger because I said, well, that's all she can say.
Exactly. And that's exactly it. So daddies don't feel overly special. It's not right? about you. It's about the developmental order that these sounds are coming in. So it's pretty much da-da-da and not daddy. But then we move then towards it's starting to sound like real words, right? So ba-ba-ba starts to sound like ball.
Yes.
You know, mama starts to sound, you know, starts to get a little intonation. Mama. Starts to get a little intonation that we can start to, dog, environmental yeah. things. Mm-hmm. So after that first word, we want the words to continue to increase. So we don't want to get stuck at just that mama or that dada or just the ball. And that's it. We want more words to be coming so that by the time, and people look at me like, really for this? By the time they're 2 years old, we say at least 50 words, but when I say at least, right. that's at the very, very least, because we have kids that are giving all up to 250 words at 2 years old. We say 50 because as research has shown that that's the number of words that you need to start combining words. Mm-hmm. So when we think of 2 years, we want to start to combine two words at least. Right, so that's where we get to stop that, sit down, all the things, all the naughty things too.
Yeah,
they're hearing the parents say all the time, "Don't touch, stop that, sit down." Right, we start hearing things like "my mind turn," things that they will get them to combine. The thing about it that it's important about that combining is that you need a range of words to combine.
Right.
So it can't be just the objects that you're seeing. You want objects, yeah. You want car and bus and boat and boy. But you also want actions. Come, run, sit. So then you could say, daddy, eat, mommy, eat, you know, and want juice. Those sort of things that we can start to combine to start to push towards those full sentences. Because we want those full sentences coming around the corner pretty soon. So if you have children who are generally, you know, between 17 and 24 months, and they're really, really stuck on just two or three words, that's where there's a bit of a concern.
Okay.
Right? After that two-year-old time, that's the time where you're like, oh my goodness, the child, don't stop talking, because there's a huge language burst, especially if they're going to daycare, they're coming home with all the songs, they're coming home with everything the teacher says. And this is why I was telling a friend today, this is why I love the kids to be in daycare preschool at this age, because they are sponges. And that's where they're soaking up everything. And we want them to be moving towards making sentences by the time they're three. And as I said, it's a range, and there are a lot of kids who will be making sentences at two. There's some that will be trying to put together some little sentences even before two. But we give them that little space to put those sentences together by about 3 years old, because at that time you want them to be coming home and telling you little things that happened at preschool. He pushed me down.
Correct.
He hit me. Yes. This fall down, you know, those little basic sentences. But that recall is so important, because one, parents say, I want my child to be able to come home and tell me if somebody interfering with them, if something happened. That's really good from a safety standpoint. But that's also the age where parents really want some sort of conversation with their child, right? You want to talk to them. You want to have a back and forth, right? So when that's not happening, it can feel a little bit disheartening, especially for new parents too, because you tend to compare, you tend to see John's daughter is saying all these things and you're wondering what's happening, right? Yeah. So at three, that's the time you should start to be talking to your pediatrician if they're not mm-hmm. combining these little sentences. We also, I talked a lot about expressive language, so how much they're saying, but we also want that at that age that they can understand a lot of what you're saying. So
right.
At 1 year, so between that 1 and 2, we want to start to look at those basic one-step directions. I always ask parents, do they understand when you tell them, go get your shoes, go put the mm-hmm. diaper in the trash or in garbage, go put it in the sink? Those basic things that happen a lot around routines, if they're yeah. understanding those. If you tell them, go get the ball, if they're going to run and get the ball, if they're going to look at you a little bit confused and you have to walk them over to the ball or point right. to the ball to show them. Then from 2, they want to be able to understand some 2-step directions. So get the bag and go give it to Gran, right? Mm-hmm. Get this and give it to mummy. Put on your shoes and get the keys. You know, whatever the case may be, those are 2-step directions. And then it continues to expand and expand. Because when you're sitting in a classroom, and sometimes I go sit in a preschool classroom just as a reminder, they give them mm-hmm. some really complex directions. So don't open that until I say whatever the case may be. There's some real conditional directions. Get your book and go line up at the door. Right, get your lunch box and go put on your shoes. So a lot of these are some real complex directions, complex instructions
yeah.
that if a child is having difficulty with language overall, we're looking mm-hmm. to see if comprehension is a problem. Because I like to tell parents, comprehension are the roots of that tree. And sometimes we need to really, really nurture that, because before we get our branches and our leaves to blossom, which is then our expressive mm-hmm. language, right? And how much they're saying. So it's a real hand in hand something. Yeah. Another thing I know you said keep this brief. Oops.
No, because this, honestly, I'm listening to you. And while these are things that I know, I am learning as well. This is refreshing for me, because I don't think that we do enough mm-hmm. to educate particularly new parents on these concepts. You know, just mm-hmm. the basics of development. So please carry on.
So I also wanted to talk, because I'm very, very big on autism and social communication. Mm-hmm. And I am so big on the social communication piece, which a lot of us miss, because we yeah. think a lot about talking and we're all focused on words, words, words. But there's so mm-hmm. much that comes before words. We have things like shared engagement, because if I'm, you know, if you're playing with a baby thing and you go, you know, it doesn't even have to be words, and the baby giggles and says yes. something back to you. You know, that's your shared engagement. Or you go peekaboo and they laugh their heads yes. off and they do something for you to initiate, for you to do that again, to continue yes. the interaction. And you do it again and they laugh and they do something. Even when they're not speaking yet, they're communicating. And that's that social communication piece. Right, they're reaching up their hands and they're reaching, you know, they're doing all these yeah. gestures for up, you know, they're reaching to get the bottle. There's some children that don't do that as yet, and we have something called 16 by 16, which are 16 mm-hmm. gestures which should be developed by 16 months. And anybody okay. listening, if you Google 16 by 16, or if you watch Miss Rachel, because we'll talk about Miss Rachel.
Oh, yes.
If you watch Miss Rachel is a classic, because she broke down those 16 by 16 into this episode, which is so amazing and which provides such good education for parents. Mm-hmm. So things like the open hand gesture, even something like waving bye-bye, yes. right? These are the important things, giving high five, clapping hands. Those are a lot of the gestures that we need to establish sometimes before those words come, right? Sure. Things like the imitation. If you're doing something and if the child is imitating you or doing exactly what you're doing, clap hands for grand, you know, if the child's trying Yay! To do that as well. So we do a lot of things that we don't know the why behind it. But there's so much mm-hmm. research behind it that shows building like those motor, what we call those motor imitation skills, those action imitation, really, really helps with that language development. So, and then things like, is the child looking when you call his name? You know, because you could be saying, calling, you know, Mark, 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 and they're not even acknowledging that you're saying something. Sometimes they'll say, leave them, he's just ignoring you, he just hard ears, right? But sometimes that's a big social communication piece. Right? So yes, so lots of those big, what we call pre-verbal communication skills that are really, really important before those words develop.
Yes, all right, so we're gonna take a pause because we have a caller, and then we're going to get back into our discussion. Good evening.
Yes, great evening. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
How are you? Oh, wonderful. That's great. Well, I love you for blessing me with your presence, and thank you that all my blessings come from you, and who you bless no man can curse. I have a couple of questions this evening. Thank Bryson for taking my call. And this is one of the most exciting topics for the year for me for this show. And I thank God about the Better Health Program and how it's able to make us better in our health. It really is a blessing. So let me add some blessings to the program. Now, my first question has to do with nonverbal communication and how it makes up more than half of the communicative value of a response and a receive, as a response and a give or a gesture, as was just mentioned, between two parties or two or more parties, I should say. How important is the aspect of learning non-verbal communication as well as the verbal, so that you can get the speech therapy for the verbal, and in other words, we know that the role of non-verbal communication, especially in a Caribbean society with people who are actors and singers and so on in the national festivals that we see, and how it's a very lucrative industry and so on, what role does that play in terms of helping children and everybody that has these challenges to communicate better, to talk, to have better speech therapy and these kind of things? My second question is has to do with emotions and speech therapy, and emotions such as anger obviously would cause us sometimes to be able to lose all functioning of the swallowing ability, and we get tongue-tied, and you know what happens in the stages of anger. We then tend to get so flustered that we lose our ability to speak. So my question is, what is the right kind of communication in terms of speech therapy and anger? Because if you are displaying these emotions that are more antisocial and nonverbal, you end up talking to yourself, and that's a serious thing. Right. My third question has to deal with the fact of the withdrawal from the language center. Children who are born neurodivergent are no more sort to develop later. I spoke when I was 7 months, and then I walked when I was a year. So you might say that I was a little bit more developed at that time, but I you know, even this is my life. I am dyslexic now, and So even though I developed early, I was able to grasp the basic concepts quickly, but still now in my 30s, I have dyslexia, which is another reading disorder that deals with the inability to learn well. So how would you equate the withdrawal of the language center in terms of being the source of communication, but at the same time, you would want to feed it with obviously foods that are nutritional. We know the blueberries and so on are good for the brain, that kind of thing. Are there any medications that can help with this language center, and how is it able in the brain then to get your thoughts and emotions and intelligences going right? Obviously talking about emotional intelligence, so that you can speak better, so that you can get over the hurdle and you can say, well, you know, I can speak a lot better than I can public speak. And from the speech therapy that was given to me, And I thank God for that as well, from my speech therapist as well, Miss Teresa. And very quickly, my last question has to do with public speaking. I just mentioned. Now the public speaking is a serious thing. It is at the height of the fear of what can be put with the two creative arts and the other artistic side. I myself am an actor, actor in the making, I should say. And, you know, if you have to shout, if you have to express emotion, if you have to go beyond your own personality to express a character, that is an even more advanced language stage than just the regular talking to a person or talking to a crowd of people. When the process of communication develops over time and you get more confident and you're able then to public speak and act and so on,
let me just interject here a second though,
but
her name is Miss Bentham, but if you ask so many questions rattling off one behind the other without giving them a chance to respond, chances are if they're not noting them down, they're not going to be able to.
Sorry for that.
You remember I told you to keep it brief, right? If you ask five questions.
I was basically finished.
All right, we'll tidy up then.
All right, very well. Now, does she believe more programs such as Sesame Street, such as what she mentioned before as well, with dealing with going back to the questions, the novel communication, the word of the day and so on, the meanings and so on of the words, and all these things deal with helping people to be better able to gladly receive and receive gladly positive messages based on the communicative value of speech. Thank you.
Okay, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so you did ask a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I might tackle them from the last one and going backwards.
No problem.
Yes. So I think
so the TV shows there.
I think from what he gathered, I think the TV shows went back to the first one, which was the nonverbal communication.
Yes.
So I think he was trying to ask something about public speaking, right? Because he is an actor. Power to you. That's awesome. We do help a lot with public speaking. A lot of it comes with confidence, and a big part of it comes to with slowing rate, enunciating, pronouncing all the words clearly, making sure all the syllables, because as Bajans, we tend to blend all our words together and talk at a very fast rate. Yes. So really focusing on pausing, breath support, and pronouncing all the words clearly, making sure that you're pronouncing the endings of the word and thinking about where the intonation, so how we're talking and how we bring our rise and our fall. Do we go up there as opposed to don't go down there, right? So making sure that those are very, very clear in public speaking. But it's also a big confidence piece too. I do some corporate speech and language therapy where I help.
I never even thought about that. I never even considered that a speech and language therapist would actually be good and would be needed in the corporate world. But that actually, it makes a lot of sense. Not understanding.
So it's really with people in leadership positions that I see who do presentations on a global scale.
Okay.
So helping them to present effectively, etc. So I do that. I hope that covered the public speaking part of it.
I think so, yeah.
Going back to supplements and things like that, I think that would be more your end. So I do know that they talk about all the different things that support brain development, and I always go with, you know, there's no harm. Once you're doing it with an evidence-based program as well of speech therapy. Yes,
exactly.
So I always say that.
So anything that will feed the brain, I always say, you know, a healthy body creates a healthy mind. That's to make it as simple as possible.
Yes. Going to the question of emotions, I talk about that a lot because when that frontal lobe kicks in, sometimes the language center does take a back seat. And it's a lot of the time the case with our people, one, people who are, as he said, neurodivergent or children and adults who are on the spectrum. It also happens with people who stutter. It also happens with people who have had strokes or a traumatic brain injury or anything that creates any damage to the brain that the language center is not functioning as it would. So then we do a lot of emotional regulation strategies. We have a really big, varied, wide and varied job. So we talk a lot about emotional regulation and transactional supports to foster emotional regulation. We give strategies that I know the psychologist will give too, like taking a breath, you know, pausing, counting to five, doing lots of deep breaths before, and then gathering thoughts, things like that before speaking, sometimes writing down thoughts before speaking, the power of pausing before speaking, just to get that brain to kind of recollect and get back to, you know, working together with that language center. In terms of the nonverbal, I think he was really more echoing a lot of what I did say, which is awesome that he was listening. So I would say, yes, the nonverbal plays a huge part and they work hand in hand. It's not, you know, we have one that develops, the nonverbal develops a lot more before the verbal kicks in, but then they work interconnectedly to support communication, whether we're waving, whether it be our facial expressions, while we're having that conversation too. And I'm always at recommending good screen time, going back to what he asked. Sesame Street, I love. You know, that's the old school, but things like the Miss Rachel and the new ones, not Cocomelon. Yes, you can go back and tell everybody that the speech therapist does not like Cocomelon because it is just repetitive, 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 which is good. But then after a while, the children get stuck on that. And we want functional language, right? Here's my plug here. We want more functional language than letters, numbers, shapes, and colors. And a lot of those programs are really pushing that, what we call the pre-academic language. Yeah. And we want to push more for the functional language because I tell parents, if God forbid something happened to you and your child had to run and say something, we want them to say, help. Mommy, things like that, as opposed to red, square, triangle. So we want functional language shows, if possible, that support that functional language. I say screen time to a minimum. I say, listen to this one, everybody, listen, Barbados, 13 minutes a day. Imagine that. 30 minutes a day. There are so many studies from the American Journal of Pediatrics and so much other research, especially since COVID and that increase in screen time that has linked it to challenges with language development, with just general overall cognitive development. 30 minutes a day and zero, listen, y'all can get back to me, zero screen time under two. Do not buy that child a tablet before 2 years old.
You just hit a lot of people in Barbados in your chest.
I just grabbed up a lot of colors.
Yes, you did.
I did, and I know it's hard, but try very, very hard. And when there is screen time, make it meaningful screen time.
Yes. I always tell parents we need to get back to quiet activities. And by quiet, I don't mean headphones kind of quiet. I mean puzzles and books and games. Yes, you need to go outside and run around, but we also need, you know, these things to problem solve and figure it out. You don't problem solve watching Cocomelon, you know. Nothing to them, but you know. So that is so, y'all heard it here from the professionals know screen time before the age of 2, and the ophthalmologists are quite with this as well. And after 2, 30 minutes a day. This is up to like what age though?
30 minutes a day forever?
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, so because as they get older, what do you want screen time for? Are they doing homework? So,
it's very true. Yeah,
30 minutes a day.
Yes, other than, you know, what they're doing for, you know, researching exactly. And, you know, looking up stuff for their homework. So we have another caller on the line. Good evening, caller.
Very good evening to you. How are you?
Hi. Today? I'm fine. How are you?
Yes, I'm well. I don't want, it's not a question, it's just an observation I made. I had a friend named Ben. Mm-hmm. Ben, he could hardly speak, used his stammer a whole lot. And I discovered that when I didn't look directly into his face, he did a lot better.
Oh.
And I missed him for about 5 or 10 years or so. And the next time I saw him, he was speaking fluently. And then he told me he was a therapist. And that was amazing.
Nice.
Because you couldn't even qualify. My name is 5 letters. You couldn't get put the name together at all. But when you look away, he could finish his sentence. So I don't know if that's anything.
Excellent. Yes, so that, thank you very much for that, comment, for your experience. It is a testimony to the importance of speech therapy when you have communication challenges. But also, I'm going to let Ms. Bentham speak to, this is where my job or her job merge, but speak to, it kind of ties in with the emotions and anxiety when it comes to speech.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Shout out to the man like Ben, because I know who he's talking about. Because he said he is a speech therapist. And there's one speech therapist named Ben.
Yeah.
What does happen, and I'm glad that you say that where our jobs link, because there's a big emotional component around feelings and attitudes when it comes to stuttering. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to, before we go there, I'm glad that we brought up stuttering, to say that there is such a thing as a normal or a developmental stutter. So remember when I, yes, bringing all the facts for you tonight.
Yes.
Remember when I said that there's a language burst that happens at 2?
Right.
Yes. So there's so many words that are coming. You're learning new words every day. That language is developing so quickly. And sometimes the brain is going way faster than that little mouth can keep up with. And you get what we call a developmental stutter. And that's a pretty normal stutter that children can have. It usually happens, so when they call me and they tell me it's a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old that's stuttering, I am usually thinking along the lines of that's a developmental stutter. That's why I say, you know, just continue to monitor it. Don't tell the child to slow down. Don't tell them stop and start again.
Oh.
Just let it come naturally, because what we want is that it kind of balances back out. What happens when I would see a child for therapy is if there's a family history of stuttering, or if there's some severe tension around the stutter, so there's a lot of anxiety around it, if they start to avoid saying things because they're aware of the stutter, that's when I would give intervention. But sometimes we just monitor it, and a lot of the time it just balances itself out, you know. And they say, oh, wait, hey, remember he used to stutter and he doesn't do it anymore. A lot of the time, too, it sounds like a lot of repetition. So, mummy, or I went to the car, right?
Yes.
When it's those repetitions as opposed to a big block where you see them, you know, clenching their fists or closing their eyes tightly.
Yes.
That's when we get concerned when they're really called those blocks. But if it's just those repetitions and they seem to have absolutely no, you know, awareness that it's happening, I give them some time, because it's usually a developmental stutter. A lot of the times there are these feelings and anxiety around the stutter that, you know, if I speak, to these people, if this person looks at me, I'm going to stutter more. So some people tend to look away or look up so that it helps. They think, because when you have a stutter, you try to actively, especially for older kids and adults, you try to actively find things that help, whether it be productive or counterproductive. You try to actually find things that help. So for them, it might be not looking in people's faces because it creates more anxiety and they tend to shut down or get blocks or you know, tapping their feet to get it out or looking up in the sky to try to find the words. Sometimes those are things that help them.
So that's very insightful.
It is, and sometimes in fluency therapy, sometimes we have to work on both the stutter, treating the stutter, but also treating the feelings and the attitudes around the stutter. And it might have to be treating not only the child's feelings and attitudes, but also the parent's feelings and attitudes.
Yes, yes, very much so. sorry, excuse me, but what I'm also hearing is that this just reinforces in healthcare the need for the team approach to treatment, because some of what you're saying as well, I know the occupational therapists, at least for our psychiatric clients, actually happen to do some of this as well. So I just get excited when I see everything just comes together, and I just, you know, in a utopia, everything would blend and you would see every single specialist you need to see in a timely fashion to make the interventions that are needed, right? I know.
That would be amazing.
I know. It would be, but, you know.
That's our perfect world. That's our perfect world. And we should keep striving for that.
Very exciting.
Especially, we need that multidisciplinary team, especially for kids with autism, because a lot of them need speech therapy, they need the occupational therapy for the sensory needs, the motor needs. Some of them need behavioral therapy because there are a lot of behavioral challenges that come along with autism too. And then some of them may need physio, you need the impact of the support too of the clinical psychologist. There's so many people involved. Yes.
So I just want parents to understand that when you get all the, you know, when you come to your doctor and the doctor says, okay, well, I need your child to get their hearing checked, because that's another thing. I know most of the, at least the private pediatricians, try to make sure at the newborn stage that the babies get their hearing checked, because I remember specifically a pediatrician saying to me, because when she is two and she's not answering you, we know it's because she does not want to and not because she cannot hear.
So moving on,
when we send you for all those different specialists, you know, there's a reason. It's not just because we want you to run here and there to different appointments, but there's an importance for each specialist we send you to.
Definitely. And going on from that hearing piece, because we don't just send you because it's fun to do so. There's a big correlation between hearing and speech, and then we go to things like speech sounds, right? If a child has a mild hearing loss, and not necessarily because it can just be like because of an ear infection, right? You get fluid up behind your ears, and hearing, if you put your fingers in your ears and listen to things around you, that muffled sound is how a child hears when they have a mild conductive hearing loss, because they have fluid behind ears, because they have wax buildup. All those things can contribute to that. And then they're hearing this sounds funny. Imagine hearing an F sound, like the F in fish, right?
Thinking of
a word like fish, which has an F at the beginning and then a SH at the end, which are those little high frequency sounds.
Yeah.
And a child isn't hearing those clearly. Sometimes they're going to produce them and make up their own sound system for those sounds, or they make up their own sounds for those sounds, or fill in or drop off the sounds. There are a lot of kids that drop off the endings of the words or drop off the beginnings of the words. And sometimes we have to send them to get the hearing test, to get the ears checked, get look mm-hmm. and see what's happening, what we call the tympanic membrane, to see what's in pressure in the air, just to make sure that they're actually hearing those sounds.
It's so true.
To be able to produce them correctly.
Yes. It's very, very true. So are there other areas of development that communication issues or speech and language challenges can affect? Because, you know, a lot of at the end of the day, a lot of our parents and caregivers, you know, the bottom line is school performance, as far
common
as they're
entrance.
Concerned.
You can say common entrance.
Yes. So are there areas that challenges with speech and language development can affect in the long run, besides
Definitely.
Just the obvious of not being able to speak or, you know, express yourself?
Yeah, so definitely, because when we look at it, we look at what language is, you know, it's being able to get your message across. If you're not able to get your message across, you're not going to have what we call narrative development, which is that ability to tell stories. So I talk about
right.
relaying the, you know, the events of the day, which is
so
what
true.
We think about as our baseline, mm-hmm. but you can't tell stories. And then we go into things like not being able to write a story, right? So how can you write a story if you can't narrate or tell a story? That's
right.
where a lot of these stories are tend to be incoherent. They tend to not have those sequencing skills, you know, a lot of those things. But then going back even further, language development is your precursor to literacy development.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And speech sound development as well is your precursor to literacy development. So we have this really cool thing that comes before literacy, and literacy is your reading. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So for those listening, so we have this thing called phonological awareness, and we do it without thinking about it. Cat is ka-at. Cat
yes.
starts with ka, ends with t. There's an a in the middle, and then we blend it. Right. If children do not have those foundation skills to be able to hear those sounds, to be able to blend those sounds, they're not going to be able to spell or read those sounds. Right. So if you have any challenges with that, whether it be from a language perspective or phonological awareness perspective or even a speech sound perspective, because
mm-hmm.
you're not hearing or producing those words clearly, it's going to affect your ability to read the sound, to read the words. It's going to affect your ability to spell the words. And I'm not even going into
yes.
writing the words and all that. So
mm-hmm.
then if you're struggling now with k at and you're
mm-hmm.
stuck there and not able to blend, when you have a sentence that says the cat is walking down the road and you're struggling with every single word in that sentence, by
mm-hmm.
the end of your sentence, you have no reading for meaning because you haven't
yeah.
understood what you've just read. Because you've been so focused on struggling to get through, even if you're able to get to the end
mm-hmm.
of that sentence, you're struggling to get to the end of that sentence. So we
mm-hmm.
want, we try to build up things like reading fluency,
mm-hmm.
right? So that we get reading comprehension or reading for meaning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what builds a good reader. That's what, you know, represents a good reader, that you're able to read fluency, you're able to, fluently, you're able to understand what you just read and to be able to talk about it. So really, you could see that academic performance then is based on, one, those literacy skills, but then
mm-hmm.
before that, those early language and phonological awareness skills.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the other thing that I thought about, well, you were saying, I actually thought, you know, went from my head just now.
All right.
Oh, dear. It was in relation to the academics. When it comes back to me,
mm-hmm.
hopefully, before the
yes.
end of the program.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
As opposed to 3 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Right. Exactly. So the next question I have, and I know you and I discussed this off air before, long time ago,
mm-hmm.
Help our listeners to understand, well, what I should say is, did COVID-19 present any challenges to communication issues and speech and language challenges with our children? Oh, and I know that's a big question.
It's a big question. It's a big resounding yes. We have had a lot, and we've been talking about it even more now because the COVID babies are now entering reception, and yes, we're seeing the challenges. It presented difficulty all around for the kids who were in school, for the kids who were at home not getting any sensory stimulation. They were getting way too much screen time, and we don't judge you for it. I mean, what could you do?
We did what we
could. What else could you do?
Yeah.
They weren't getting the stimulation. They weren't getting the social interaction, that social communication piece. Because you take the kids out, you take them to the park, you take them to Chafet Play Park, you take them to the supermarket. And we were not doing that. You know, nobody was taking their children to line up outside the supermarket.
They went nowhere.
You know, they went nowhere. And we saw the effects of it. There's a study that came out. It came out probably about 2 years ago that they said that the IQ of typically developing children, who this is those that had no language delay, no cognitive delays, nothing, it dropped by 20 points. Imagine that. 20 points is a lot. So we started these kids at a disadvantage, and it makes me so sad. It made me so sad all through COVID. And we're seeing the effects of it. We're seeing so many more kids. I could tell you, every speech therapist in Barbados right now has a waiting list for therapy. We apologize if you're listening and you're on our waiting list. We apologize.
Yeah, I know, right?
But there has been this serious influx of children with so many different speech and language challenges. And I can't say that COVID and COVID lockdowns caused it, but there's just so many factors that happened during that time that just contributed so much. We had the kids who were in reception at that time that lost their access from being online. So one, the social interaction, and two, like the building blocks for literacy development. You know, all those foundation skills, a lot of them miss. And we're seeing it now with the kids who are struggling to read and struggling with their academic performance. And I mean, I could give you a whole talk on this for the whole night. But just in a nutshell, it has affected our kids. We failed our kids. I said that so many times during the pandemic. We failed our kids. We failed our kids. We failed our kids.
We do.
And it's, how do we get back? How do we recoup what has been lost and build on, you know, supporting these children in a way that they can be truly our future, that they can be our leaders, that, you know, because they shouldn't have to worry about things like this. These are our kids, and they had so much of a burden to bear without even realizing it, just because of being at home, not having the access to so much during the pandemic. So, you know, where do we go from here? Where do we go as a community? How do we do it from a ministerial perspective? The waiting list, I'll tell you something. One of my clients who's on a waiting list for government services, for government speech therapy, got two of them actually got the call 7 years later. Later. And what does that say for early intervention? Eliminates early intervention, because we want to get these kids in between birth to three, birth to five. To give them the most support. So when we really, really miss these critical years, what do we do? We can't really think about 11 plus and all those things are related to it. We need to think about educational reform from
preschool.
Yes. And then something that you had a revelation that you gave me in our conversations earlier this year, is that you spoke about the fact that then when the children had to go back to school, then their teachers were wearing masks. They couldn't see how to properly form
the sounds.
Because you can see the mouth movement. They literally imitate us, and they couldn't.
Yep, because behind a mask, things like an F and an S sound the same way, an M and an N sound the same way. So, yeah, the kids struggled all around.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate, honestly. But, you know, there is hope in speech therapy. It takes the same team approach that we were discussing. And even our previous caller that spoke about the fact that speech therapy helped their friend that they knew, you know, I'm sure Sharika has a lot of success stories that she could tell us that we would not be able to get through even for the rest of the year. But what is also, this may sound very silly or simple to our listeners, but one of the things, I do remember the point that I was coming back to, which was even for parents, I like to stress using screen time for yourself. Something productive. Don't get me wrong, I love Instagram and that sort of thing as well, but also when you're on Instagram, apart from following the gossip and blog pages, you need to also follow educational pages, because there's a lot of information out there and a lot of things that we as caregivers can do while you are waiting to see the professional. There's so much information that's out there for free. And one of the things that a couple of pages that I was following, in especially during the pandemic, they were saying that we literally have to get back to understanding we need to talk to our children, not just talk at them, but actually having conversations, because I think it goes without saying that saying wah wah and bah bah as an adult is ridiculous to the child. You have to actually speak to the child. But I remember one of the tips that I can't remember the name of the page they were giving was literally like almost narrating the day for the child. Like you're saying, I am going to change your pamper now. And as silly as you may feel saying that about every single thing, that actually, because where else is your child going to learn these things from?
Exactly. Not Cocomelon.
No. So.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because yes, follow any page on Instagram that has speech, that looks at language. Yes. If you do a search on Instagram, they're always giving tips. They're always giving tips and different things you can do. Just to give you a tip for those listening at home who's wondering, what can I do while I wait for services? Yes. Loved your know about commenting on things to do during the day. The way children learn language mainly, especially very little ones, and we can do this as even another segment for tips and language tips and tricks.
Yes.
But the way they learn language, one is through play, because we want to build all those play skills too. It's through play and through daily routines. And daily routines can be anything you do from the moment you wake up to the time the child goes to bed. So it can be meal time. It can be changing diaper, as you said. It can be, you know, bath time. It can be brushing teeth. You're adding language. You're adding language. You're adding simple language. Anything that you can get repetition in, because if every time you go in the bath and you say towel, right, they're going to associate it, and they're going to start to try to say it as well, right? They're going to understand it. You know, every time you say brush your teeth, you realize that they're looking for the toothbrush. So really, really adding language to every interaction, whether it be play or the routines, that's the first thing. That's the first thing that I teach parents. The other thing that I teach is waiting and giving, because it's sometimes really, really hard when you have a child that's not talking back to you.
Oh, yes.
So you tend to fill in the space, right?
Me too.
But what we want you to do is wait a little bit and say, and see what they do.
Let them try to respond.
Even if they vocalize, even if they giggle, that's a response. That's the response. And we praise that response. And we encourage them to speak in that space. Right, so we give them, I call it the power of the pause, and I could talk for hours on the power of the pause. So we really pause to give them that chance to realize it's their time to take a turn in communication. And that's how, that's our building blocks of conversation right there. I say something, and I pause, and you say something. Sometimes we don't pause, and when a child feels like they don't have to take a turn, they're not going to say anything. The other thing, too, is when they feel like they don't need to ask for something, when you're anticipating their needs for everything, they're not going to communicate because it's right there for them. Why do I need to ask for milk? If milk is right there for me.
It's
so if we're holding back a little bit and waiting, even if they go,
showing that they're trying to communicate
initiating communication and we want to create initiators and not just responders. We want kids that are going to come to you and go, our milk, our mummy juice, whatever the case may be as the developmental stage progresses, but that's what we want to create. So we want to set up situations at home. We call them communication temptations. Right? Mm-hmm. So putting down the container in front of them closed. Don't open the container, put it down for them and see what they do. If they shake it and hand it to you, if they give you a little vocalization for that, right? Or give it, you know, put in something too high that they can't reach it. I know parents, they come and tell me, they can go in the fridge and get whatever they want. But how are they going to ask them for what they want? If they're going in for an independent little man. Right.
Yeah.
So we want to set up situations.
Yeah. Because I think that we, you know, like when we were discussing how speech and language challenges affect academics, you know, but obviously communication is an everyday skill that you need to have. And how do you expect your child or even an adult to be able to say, well, my head is hurting or there is a strange man outside, if they have never been communicating their needs before? I am scared because there is a centipede. Like, you have to say these things. They have to be able, you know, it starts with the I want milk.
Mm-hmm. It starts there.
Yeah, I think we don't realize that. I remember a teacher at preschool actually told me, you know, she said, because they take children at, you know, just about 18 months, they don't necessarily expect every child to come in, you know, saying the 250 words or even 50 words, right? But if the child, what is important is that the child didn't need to be potty trained, but they need to be able to communicate their needs.
Yeah.
So if they want something, even if it is to pull auntie's hand and point to the water bottle on the counter and make
pointing is such an important gesture.
Yes, all of those things are important because you have to be able to communicate your needs and, as you said, initiate communication and not just respond. Because yes, every child can say, what color is this? Red. But then they don't say anything else, you know.
Nothing
and I want parents to understand that colors and numbers and that sort of thing will come.
There's enough repetition for it everywhere that they get it. And it's very visual.
They do the same thing in preschool that they do in reception and they do it over again in infancy. I tell parents, they will get it, you know? They will get it. So the time has gone so quickly, and I am glad that you have given me an idea for another topic, because listeners, Ms. Bentham is very, very, very excited to educate the public, because, you know, at the end of the day, we get into these fields because we want to help. So I'm very happy to hear you quite willing to come back on the show, and I'm sure our listeners will be glad about that. Any parting words in the couple of minutes that we have left?
Oh, parting words. There's so many. I will tell parents that you're doing a great job. I mean, parenting is hard. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yes.
And it's really about knowing the things to do to support your child. Look for the different outlets. There's so many different outlets. Speak to your pediatrician. Call a speech therapist. Too. Even if we have a waiting list and we can't see you directly, ask a question, right? Yes. I say, you know, but while I'm waiting, what can I do to help my child or whatever the case may be? Get a lot of help from, you know, there are the social media networks. Continue to comment, narrate your child's life like you are Morgan Freeman, you know.
Correct.
As the child walks, whatever they're looking at,
carry
the kids outside, let them have lots and lots of sensory exploration. Like, let them touch the trees, let them feel their feet on the grass, even if they don't like it initially, you know, get them used to so many different sensory experiences, because that's, you know, it's really good to learn language through sensory play and sensory experiences. Go on Pinterest and look up sensory bins and sensory play as well.
And they're so simple.
Yes, so simple. Pinterest is another really good hub of knowledge for anything speech and language. Just type in speech and language, milestones, activities, all those things. Lots of things will come up too. And yeah, really go from there. Don't get too overwhelmed, because sometimes there can be so much information that it can be overwhelming. But just do little bits. That's all you can do, you know. Do little bits each day. I'm not sending you to be super mom or super dad. No. Really, just do little bits, incorporate it into your everyday routine so it's easy. Spend, you know, 5 to 10 minutes getting on the floor, playing with the child, teaching them how to play with toys, being silly, having fun, and you see engagement and all those things start to come. Also, one more takeaway, do not listen to grannies and granddads that say, he can talk when he's ready.
Yes, please don't.
This person didn't talk until he was six and he was good. No. He will not talk when he's ready. Try to seek to get some sort of intervention and some sort of support. Even if it's you giving the support right now,
I agree.
Give him some support.
Correct. Exactly. So thank you so much. That was Ms. Sharika Bentham. She's a speech and language therapist. Today we discussed speech and language challenges. And thank you, as usual, Gregson, for being our moderator. Wonderful job as always. And we will see each other, hear each other again.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Okay, that's Sharika Bentham, this evening's guest on the Better Health Radio Show. And the pilot in the ship this evening was Dr. Keo Fordston Hill. She neglected to tell me if she'll be back next week or no, but we will wait and see.
You know, I always I like to keep you guessing.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, no problem. Thank you so much, Dr. Keo Fortin Hill and Sharika Bentham, presenting to you the Better Health Radio Show. We will hear from the good doctors next weekend, God's willing, either at 6 o'clock, depending if it's cricket, or 6:30. Nevertheless, we thank them all for being
here.
Thank you so kindly, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.